It's that time. Lock and load. The Michael Vary Show is on the air.
Heard about the story, you may have even seen the video, that Tucker Carlson was in Montana over the weekend, and a fly fishing guide comes up to him at what looks like a fishing expedition shop. I'm guessing he was either buying some flies or some sort of fishing equipment, or maybe they had an expedition for him that day that he was taking out a guide. I don't know. If you can tie your own fly and fly fish, then you're a better man than me, because I can't. When you see that the fly you're putting on there is about the size of the end of a pinhead, and you realize that you're doing that standing out in the water, that granted is not deep, but there's rocks underneath there, and some of them are slick. Depending on how fast the water is flowing, I'm just worried about busting my ass. So I am not too proud to tell you that I'm hiring somebody else to put my fly on there. You don't need to email me, guess what? I can do some things you can't do. That's true too. I just admitted I cannot put the damn fly on there. My wife can. Crockett can. I can't. Just can't do it. So anyway, Tucker Carlson is at the shop in Montana, and the guy comes up and gets in his face and has his buddy film him, like this is going to be some great thing he does, and proceeds to tell Tucker that he is the worst human being in the history of mankind. That he's a horrible, horrible person. And that he is the fault of all the problems in this country. So I have to assume, the guy's white. He's a big boy. I have to assume he's a white liberal. Or a guy that probably, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, he's probably a real big sports fan. This is the kind of guy that thinks Colin Kaepernick is a real cutting-edge American. This is the kind of guy, he's probably 30 years old. He's a big boy. He's a lot bigger than Tucker is. This is the kind of guy who actually believes the news. When I tell you there's three groups of people, the left, you who are willing to fight back, and the 85% of people that are somewhere on the spectrum, this guy's in that group. This is a guy who generally figures there's a lot of racism in this country, and we need to do a lot about it. And he doesn't know what that is, but, you know, if some people have to have their businesses taken away, that's fine too, because there's been bad stuff. And this is the product of our education system. This is the product of our media. This is the product. This is where we are. And this guy believes that what he's about to do in telling Tucker Carlson he's the worst human being in the history of mankind. I mean, you're going up to a random dude at a fly fishing shop where this guy presumably works. I don't know. But we're told he's a fly fishing guide. This guy has his buddy film him. I think he's drunk. As he engages in this confrontation, Tucker tells him, calm down, son. And turns and sees that somebody's filming and smiles and kind of laughs and walks off. And the guy follows him. And we're to assume that they eventually go their own way. What's interesting is how many people reached out to me as a result of this to say how concerned they were about this. I was at a dinner party on Friday night, and it was all anyone could talk about. And what's surprising is how unsurprised I am. There weren't any blows thrown. There was just the confrontation. It wasn't even a particularly threatening or intimidating confrontation. The guy didn't at any moment look like he was going to throw a punch. He didn't look like he was armed. He didn't look like he sought to do anything other than say his piece. Now, is this good? No, this isn't good. This sort of nonsense can escalate very quickly. Should Tucker Carlson be exposed to this? Should this be a result of being a famous person offering opinions on TV every day? No, it shouldn't. But nobody seems to have cared that Ted Cruz has been surrounded at airports where you're supposed to have security, that Ted Cruz and his wife, Heidi, have been at restaurants where they've been surrounded by people making threats. What about all the people sitting at restaurants outside over the last year that BLM and Antifa have come up and literally turned the tables over, thrown their food, threatened them? You know, we want you to make this salute, or we want you to give a black power sign. And people were intimidated as a group of people were filming them and closing in on them. This is the America that the left wants. And the idea that you can hide from it at a fly fishing shop in Montana. A lot of people are still operating under the delusion that, well, as long as I don't go to downtown Houston, as long as I don't end up in Chicago or San Francisco, I can hide from this. It's bad, but not worth me investing much emotion into it. No, you don't understand. Once they labeled you a Nazi, they can do anything and everything to you, and they must, because you are a Nazi. And if they do not confront you and destroy you, then you will continue on with your Nazism, and all the Jews and gypsies will be killed. We'll have another Holocaust, and the whole world will be in a war. So just as we now realize that the great dilemma that Elie Wiesel talked about for decades, why didn't more people stand up early and stop Hitler? These people have decided you are Hitler, not just Tucker Carlson. You are Hitler, and you must be stopped. And the patriotic, proud thing to do is to get in your face until you run and hide. And they may have to beat you, and they may have to confiscate everything you have, and they may have to close down your business, and they will force you to wear a mask, and they will do whatever they want to do, because they must. Because otherwise, as Hitler, well, I mean, what would you do given the chance to stop Hitler earlier? Well, once they've decided you're Hitler and make you out to be Hitler, and that brings us to January 6th. Come on. The
Michael Berry.
The Michael Berry Show.
California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger says we have to communicate and show people that you can protect the environment and the economy at the same time. There is no place that's a more perfect example of that than California. Okay. Yeah. Keep doing that until there are no longer any businesses left there, because that's where you're headed. Jim, you're on the Michael Berry Show. What you got, sir?
Hey, Mr. Berry, good morning. Quick hit for you, sir. I don't have the solution, but I may have a possible solution to your fly tying conundrum. I go buy Eagle Claw 10-pound leads, and I cut the hook off, but I leave the loop at the top. And then I, under a magnifying glass, before I go fly fishing, because I have vision issues, I will tie the flies I want to use for that particular fly tying fishing trip, and I'll pre-tie the flies. And then when I get in the stream, I just throw it, run them to that Eagle Claw hook loop at the top, and they're easy to tie, and the fish don't care. I'll catch the crud out of trout and stuff once I, because it's easy for me to tie. I have the same issue, Mr. Barry.
Where do you fish?
I've been fishing. I go all over, sir, but I've been to Bainbridge Island and off the outside of SeaTac, Seattle, Tacoma. I've been to up above Park City, Utah, fly fishing. And my dream is to go to Montana to go fly fishing. But I grew up fly fishing up in Michigan and Indiana, sir. My granddaddy taught me how to fly fish.
Interesting. How often do you get to fish
solution.
Now? No, that's interesting. How often do you get to fish now?
Well, sir, because I retired from the military but walked right into another career, it's few and far between, probably every 6 months, sir, when I get a chance. But I will tell you, I do. I fly fish, and I have a good cigar in my mouth at the same time, because where I fly fish, there can be bears around, and the cigar smoke tends to let the bears know I'm there, so they don't think I'm good eating because I smell like cigar smoke.
Very interesting. I just watched a video during the last break of these four bears. I think it was at Niagara Falls, but I'm not positive. It was at a fall. I'm not sure where it is. And this fish jumps out of the water, and this bear snaps him with his mouth. I'm going to post it to the blog, michaelberryshow.com. Thanks for the call. And this bear grabs it out of the air, and there are four bears, and the other three turn and look at him. And it's like humans. It's as if they're going, damn, Sam, I can't believe you did that. It's incredible. I'll post it to the blog here in just a minute. I sent it to my wife. She got a kick out of it. Ramon, did I tell you we were rafting down the Roaring Fork River two Sundays ago, and out of nowhere, we come around a bend, and there's a bear coming up out of the water looking goofy as all get out. Because he's scrambling to get up on the bank. And then when he gets up on the bank, we can't stop. We're in the river. So we can't do anything. We have to float right past him. Because the river's moving too fast. And we float past him. I don't want to exaggerate, but 40 feet. It's the closest I've ever been to a bear. Well, when he got up on the bank, he doesn't stand up anymore. He leans over on all four, his haunches, as my grandmother would say. And he turned his head to us, and he looked like he could be on the cover of a magazine about bears. Or maybe a World Wildlife Federation or something. And he just sat there and looked at us as we went past. And I don't know how long we were floating to go past him, but I know how long it felt. And it felt like a long time. How about Greg Popovich and the U.S. Men's Olympic team losing to France? They lost to France. You know, when Donald Trump was president, the basketball team never lost. Ever. But now Biden's president. I blame Biden. And I'm so delighted because I can't stand Popovich and I can't stand Steve Kerr. And since Popovich is coaching this team and has the shame of being the first team to lose since 2004, I'm enjoying that. However, I can't tell you that I watched the game. Because I'm not watching any of the Olympics. I wasn't going to watch them anyway. But I saw a promo on Twitter that NBC was doing. And every 4 years they tell us why we're supposed to care about the Olympics. Well, I don't care about the Olympics. and I saw, let's see if I can pull this up, it was the lowest viewership for the Olympics in, here we are, 33 years. The Tokyo Olympics opening drew the lowest viewership in 33 years. How about that? A letter that was sent to a family in Dallas that was sent to, I guess, every person that has a home in the Dallas Independent School District that feeds to Highland Park, or Highland Park Independent School District, which is supposed to be a good school district. A letter that was sent to the parents in this particular neighborhood under the headline, under the banner, the letterhead of Dallas Justice Now. It says, "Dear Miss Bianca Colgan, we want you to take the college pledge. We are writing to you because we understand you are white and live within the Highland Park Independent School District and thus benefit from enormous privileges taken at the expense of communities of color. You live in the whitest and wealthiest neighborhood in Dallas. Whether you know it or not, you earned or inherited your money through oppressing people of color. However, it is also our understanding that you are a Democrat and supporter of the Black Lives Matter movement, which makes you one of our white allies and puts you in a position to help correct these cruel injustices. We need you to step up and back up your words with action and truly sacrifice to make our segregated city more just. We are asking you to pledge that your children will not apply or attend any Ivy League school or U.S. News & World Report Top 50 school. If you do not have children under 18, then we ask you to pledge to hold your white privileged friends, family, and neighbors with children to this standard. These schools have afforded white families privilege for generations. Having your children attend these schools takes away spaces from students of color who really need the job opportunities, education, and influence that these schools provide. We know that this sounds like a tough commitment to make, but it is truly disheartening to see wealthy white folks sending charitable donations, posting Black Lives Matter on social media, or putting up yard signs as if to say that minimal effort is all they are prepared to do in the fight for racial justice. The quest for justice requires commitment from our white allies, and we thank you in advance for your anticipated cooperation in making such a commitment. Ago today, Mick Jagger is born. Michael Philip Jagger in Dartford, Kent, England. Ramon, do you remember the name of his wife from Dallas? That is correct. Oh, turn this up.
Gonna bring a case of wine. Hey, it's gonna mess my foot around. You know, like we used to.
Olympic opening ceremony ratings going back to 1988. Wow. Think about this. This is in the U.S., the U.S. numbers only. Think how much bigger our population is now. And the ratings are this bad. I saw a promo that NBC was doing. And they had Simone Biles on there, the most decorated gymnast in American, in Olympics history. Houston story. Great story. Love everything about her story. Love the way she carries herself. Love the decisions she makes. Love the training, the willingness to try things that other gymnasts won't even try, and then sticking them. Houston has such a prominent place because Bella Caroli was here. You had the training center in Houston. The great Carrie Strug story. I went to law school with her cousin, Paul. Great family, wonderful people. And if you remember, she had the broken foot and or twisted, I guess it's a twisted ankle. And it might have even been broken. I don't know. It's probably better if it was broken than it was twisted. But by all accounts, she was in excruciating pain. She lands it. Mary Lou Retton. I mean, you just got these great Houston gymnast stories. But I cannot bring myself to support. I won't. And not just as some big show of I'm not going to give my eyeballs to a show, to something because I'm not going to support you because I disagree. I've lost interest in sport. What used to be so great about sports was the competition, the sacrifice, the scorekeeping, who would win, the way when you're competing to win, what you would, that's all gone. We were at a restaurant last night, and this group of kids comes in, and they're 9-year-olds, and they got their little uniforms on, and they're just adorable little boys. And they're coming past our table, and I stopped them, and I said, boys, wait right there. I got a couple of questions. Did you win or lose? We won. What did you win? World Series. Wait a second. I don't think the Little League World Series is being played in Aspen, Colorado. That might be Williamsport. But how old are y'all? 9. And y'all won what? World Series. Won it all. Okay, well, there were 6 teams. This group of kids were from Oklahoma. There were 6 teams, and it ended up being 2 Oklahoma teams. It was 1 Texas team, a Colorado team, an Arizona team, 2 Oklahoma teams. I don't know if that adds up, but whatever. So they win whatever this tournament was. But they think it's the World Series. That's all that matters. And I'm asking them questions. And then the dad comes over at one point, and he's getting a kick out of this because he can tell I'm grilling him. And we go through what all their signs are, and they wouldn't give me their signs. And I said, boys, the World Series is over. You are the champion of it all. You don't need to hide your signals anymore. And so the dad said, y'all can tell him the signals. So I made each of the kids give me the steal signal, the take signal, you name it. And it was the most adorable thing. And I thought, that's what sports are supposed to be about. That's it. Not kids out there trying to make a social statement. The competition, the beauty of sports was that you didn't care what somebody's skin color was or their politics. How well can you hit the ball, catch the ball, throw the ball? What strategies do you employ? It's a game of chance. And yet that's not what the Olympics is anymore. So with that in mind, we go back into the archives for a great moment in Olympic history.
The Olympics, they've gotten too foreign.
And now, great moments in Olympic failure. Ah! During the 1992 Olympic Games in Barcelona, everyone was listening to Vanilla Ice and wearing high top fade haircuts. Ice, ice, ice. But yet, despite this ridiculousness, the biggest loser was still a man named Dan O'Brien. Because 1992 was the year when Reebok spent a whopping $30 million, or $51.8 million by today's standards, on a marketing campaign for a pair of decathletes, Dan O'Brien and Dave Johnson, which led up to the Barcelona Olympics.
Dave doesn't know about this, but Reebok gave me this top-secret running shoe. It's called the Pump Graphlin. This arch design makes them very light, supportive, and I have the only pair in existence.
Dan and Dave were going to be huge. They even became something of a national phenomenon, as people were swept up by the buzz of seeing these two major athletes go head-to-head in the big Olympic match. But there was just one problem with the Dan vs. Dave marketing campaign. Dan did not qualify to go to the Olympics. So instead, Reebok had to switch the campaign from Dan and Dave to Dan and a guy watching from the stands.
Hi, I'm Dan O'Brien, and much like you, I enjoy watching the 1992 Olympics from the comfort of my own couch. Laugh all you want, but it's hard to get injured when you're sitting in a Lazy Boy.
That was Great Moments in Olympic Failure.
This is our talk radio. Too high. It's reported you've been drinking and are running around with men and going wild. And we don't believe you ought to be bringing up your little girl this way. And it was signed by the secretary, Harper Valley PTA. Surprised when Mrs. Johnson wore her mini skirt into the room. And as she walked up to the blackboard, I can still recall the words she had to say. She said, I'd like to address this meeting of the Harper Valley PTA. Well, there's Bobby Taylor sitting there, and seven times he's asked me for a date. And Mrs. Taylor sure seems to use a lot of ice whenever he's away. And Mr. Baker, can you tell us why your secretary had to leave this town? And shouldn't Gwyneth Jones be told to keep her window shades off or completely down?
That, of course, is Jeannie C. Riley. You knew that. And I'll have to assume you also knew that that was written in 1968 by Tom T. Hall, the storyteller, as he is known. And that's a pretty good story. From Olive Hill, Kentucky, is Tom T. Hall. I'm not sure where Jeannie Riley is from. Anson, Texas. You know where Anson, Texas is? Let's see. It's kind of dead center, just north of dead center. It's Jones County, population 2,430. It's outside of Abilene. Originally named Jones City, it was named to Anson in 1882 in honor of Anson Jones, the last president of the Republic of Texas. How about that? Let's go to Robert. Robert, you're on the Michael Berry Show. What you got, sir?
So the thing you read about the Ivy League schools, that was probably one of the stupidest things I've ever heard. I got 2 points. That's the first one. It's they don't want us to judge anyone by race, but yet that is totally about race. The second thing is about the Olympics. I wonder how many of these America haters and America was never great. I wonder how many of them are wanting America to win gold and everything to show how great we are. Just another level of their hypocrisy.
Yeah. Thanks for the call. I would agree. So, yeah. I'm just thinking. The odd thing about talk radio is that it works much better when you've already thought about what you're going to say. So pondering in real time. Yeah, I suppose that's true. I mean, growing up, we watched sporting events as a family. Astros, Oilers. We couldn't get the Rockets. So in Orange, we had we only had the three, NBC, ABC, CBS. This was, of course, before Fox and before we had cable. We didn't get cable till later, much later, late into my teens. And I can remember the thrill during the summer. I could watch every Braves game and every Cubs game. I was neither a fan of the Braves nor the Cubs before that, but like a lot of kids, a lot of folks my age can give you the entire lineup of those mid-80s Braves teams and those mid-80s Cubbies. And we were introduced to Harry Carey. Now, the interesting thing about that is that the voice of the Astros for all those years absolutely hated Harry Carey. And Ramon didn't tell me that. And so the first time I meet him and I bring up Harry Carey, he absolutely lost his mind. It was a rivalry that had gone back decades and decades and decades. But we sat around watching sporting events. Sunday afternoon would be the car races, and my dad would sit there and take a nap. And I wasn't a big fan of watching the car races, but that's what we did together. We watched all the major boxing bouts together. Every fight, we were a George Foreman family. We loved George Foreman. We loved the heavyweight bouts of that era. We watched the Astros, the Oilers. You couldn't get the Rockets back then, Ramon, but if you thunked the station over and you went to the UHF instead of the VHF, you could get a little grainy. Could you watch the Rockets games back then? There was a Channel 20 out of Houston, and you could if the wind was blowing just right, you might could watch Calvin Murphy and Rudy Tomjanovich running up and down the court what was the guy that we got from Virginia? Ralph Sampson. And then Akeem came on in, what was that, 80, the year they had the Twin Towers. And I would so desperately want to watch them, and you couldn't. But that was, I didn't know those guys' politics. Now they're more worried about making a show of their wokeness than they are playing the sport.